Mr. Fever, a real one. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Austria, in fact.
Whereabouts in Austria?
A town called Wiener Neustadt, which is just outside Vienna.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was trained as an engineer. He was with Austro Daimler at the time. But he's British, in fact.
Did you go to school in Wiener Neustadt?
No, I came over here when I was a small baby, and I've since lived in this country.
We should record when you were born, please.
6th of June, 1922.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I was having a temporary job because I knew I'd be called up. First of all, I was a volunteer stretcher bearer in Barnet. And then we moved out subsequently out to Welling. So my father's work moved out. And I just had temporary jobs because I knew that I would be called up, and there was no point in having a permanent job at the time.
How had you reacted when you heard the news that we had declared war on Germany? Was there any conflict of loyalty?
Because I was born in Vienna?
Yes.
No, I regarded myself, having lived in this country for the whole of my life, as a true Brit, if you like. So there was no conflict, no.
How did you feel about the war declaration?
I suppose I felt that it was inevitable, like most other people. Although I must say that having been brought up as a member of Society of Friends, a Quaker, and having gone to a Quaker boarding school, my outlook probably was a little bit different, in that many of my friends, of course, became conscientious objectors. And I, at that time, pondered whether I should indeed myself be a CO, but I decided probably that the Nazi regime was such that going to war was about the only way to bring it to an end.
So you didn't regard yourself as a pacifist?
Not really, no. Although I was brought up in a pacifist atmosphere, I didn't regard myself, no, as pacific enough not to join up, although I did try to enlist in some non-combatant unit. I tried, first of all, to get into camouflage corps because I was at art college, and I therefore thought, well, that would be a good, interesting sort of job. And then, having failed, I volunteered for the Royal Army Medical Corps as the next best thing. But at that time, all they were doing was taking people and putting them where there was the need. So I was not successful there.
Which year did you apply for the RMC?
Well, it would have been 1941, I suppose.
Had you by that time been in any bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
Yes, I had indeed, because I was working at that time in London, in Victoria, during the Battle of Britain, and coming back from London to Welling, the train would often go through very, very slow periods at that time. When there was an alert, trains slowed down to 15 miles an hour, which made the journey awfully tiresome. And of course, on my journeys from King's Cross to Victoria in the mornings, the bus would have to take various different routes because of the bomb damage. One never knew how one was going to get from King's Cross to Victoria, for example. So, and I was also in London, in going to the show in the evening when there were bombing raids on fairly frequently.
Did any of the bombs fall anywhere near you personally?
No. I think the nearest was at home one night in the country, a German bomber, I think, probably jettisoned his bombs about half a mile away, and probably that was the nearest that I suffered any contact with them, with bombing.
Why was it that no bombs fell near you in London? Because you were there in the daytime?
Yes. I don't really know. I travelled every day to Victoria, and there were never any daytime bombing, I think, at that time. It wasn't until the V1 started to come over that they got a bit close. And I suppose it was just luck in the evening that we were in the West End, which suffered less, of course, than the East End.
Could I ask you about a controversy which seems to have arisen in recent weeks about the situation in Britain during the war? Because on the one hand, some people say that there was a diminishing of class divisions. And on the other hand, some people are trying to make out that there was a sharpening of class divisions during the war. What was your own personal experience of that?
Oh yes, I saw the programme last night. I don't think it impinged on me in any way. I didn't have a great deal of contact with what you call working class people, perhaps. I mean, I was brought up in a middle class family, and so one never thought about any kind of divisions, and I don't think that they became apparent at that time at all. There was difficult to analyse the feeling immediately after Dunkirk. I think people were very obviously shocked, but there was a tremendous feeling of, I think, to my mind, of pulling together, if you like. And this controversy seems to have been gathering over the years. There was an account of how people in Southampton had behaved, for instance, when they left the city in droves every night and went into the countryside. But on the whole, it didn't really impinge on me to a great extent. I wasn't conscious of it.
Another point which has come up as a point of controversy is over the effect of bombing. There is, some people say that people were demoralised by the German bombing. Other people say no. What's your own feeling? What was your own experience about whether the bombing had a demoralising effect?
I don't really know. Say, I didn't personally come into contact with anybody who had suffered as a consequence of bombing at that stage. So I really didn't have anything to go on.
What were you trained as in the RAMC?
Well, I didn't go into the RAMC, actually. As I said, I was not successful. So
where did you go instead?
Well, I was called up and first volunteered for the Royal Air Force, having been turned down for the RAMC. And was told that, oh no, there were no vacancies for tradesmen, which was silly, really, because if they'd wanted you, they'd have said, oh, don't worry, we'll train you. But, of course, what they were doing at that stage in 1941 was building up the army as much as possible. So you were really drafted more or less straight into some arm in the land forces.
When were you called up?
I was called up in 42.
And what did you think of the training that you had after being called up?
What did I think of the training? Well, it was a new world to me entirely, of course. Having been brought up in more or less, a Quaker and pacifist background, coming into contact with all the different types of chaps that were called up as well, one found it very bewildering at first. They were so different. I mean, they swore a lot, of course, which I, at that time, hadn't. I subsequently joined them, of course, in my language, but one does in the army anyway. They were obviously sort of tough working class lads, and I felt a little bit fish out of water because I had a secondary education and I was sort of middle class. So that the training, I enjoyed it in a strange way, despite all the bull, which I found was stupid, so much so that out of each training platoon, three local acting unpaid lance corporals were created, and one of them was myself. So very shortly, I think, after going into the training centre, I became an acting unpaid lance corporal, which meant I had to march men about the square, march them to the mess hall and so forth, and drill them, having received a modicum of drill myself in the first few weeks. Because at that time, we were being trained for 6 months. You went into what was called an infantry training centre, not a preliminary training centre. So you had 6 months infantry training, general training, before you actually were drafted to a battalion. So it was quite a long time, and one ended up being quite well trained, in fact, in weaponry and drill and blankoing and brassing and all the other stupid things which were meant, of course, to turn you into a soldier.
Which unit did you go into?
When I left the training unit, I was drafted to the Manchester Regiment.
Which battalion?
The 1st Battalion, which was only just had become the 1st, because the 7th was had been the 1st had been badly knocked about, I think, in the Far East. So we became the 1st Battalion. Mind you, at that time I'd never heard of the Manchester Regiment. I'd never been farther north than Watford. And it was very strange to me to join a mob like the Manchester Regiment. I couldn't understand what they were talking about for the first month, because some of them were very, very broad Lancashire accents.
Apart from that, what impression did the unit make on you?
Well, it was. Let's see. The sergeant major was not very welcoming. I remember one of the remarks he made, that I'm going to make these buggers sweat, meaning the chaps who just joined from rookies from the training, and a lot of them, of course, were old members. It was probably had been a territorial mob, and a lot of the original soldiers, of course, probably were pre-war anyway. So that the rookies were really not very well accepted. And we did go through it quite a lot. Gradually one became acclimatized and accepted, but it took some time. So one felt very strange joining a mob, of people who came from, as we called it, a distant part of the country, Lancashire, and also sort of, if you like, more or less professional soldiers.
Now, you went across to France in the summer of 1944.
That's
Can
right.
Can you tell me about that process, please?
Yes, certainly. I have some very sort of vivid memories. One of them, I think, was when we went down to the boat from Tilbury Docks, or Dagenham Docks, rather, from the camp where we were, as you know, very, very carefully separated from everybody else. You couldn't go in or couldn't go out because we were obviously secret. Well, that's not quite the word, is it?
secure.
But they had to be secure, obviously. And then we went through the East End of London, which was very, very badly damaged, of course, and buzz bombs were flying, V1s were dropping all over the place. And I remember we had a wonderful reception. All the people were lining the streets and cheering us and throwing little packets of five woodbines wrapped up in newspaper and a couple of razor blades. And I mean, they have very little, and this is 1944, obviously, but they gave what they had, and I think it was one of the warmest kind of welcomes that I've ever known. And we felt rather shamefaced because we were being treated as heroes, of course. we hadn't even been into battle at that time, but it was a wonderful feeling. And then we embarked at Dagenham, and subsequently spent a week anchored off Southend Pier, because this was the time of the great storm off the beaches, so everything was held up for a week. So we would have landed a week earlier than we did. In fact, we landed on the 21st of June, dry shod. Thankfully, we didn't have to wade through any water.
Whereabouts did you land?
We landed on Juno Beach, at a place called Grace-sur-Mer, which is a small village.
What sights greeted your eyes in Normandy on landing?
I think because the battle had moved inland, what we saw, of course, was things like the German signs for minefields, Achtung, Minen, which were sort of stuck on poles, and the occasional grave of a soldier, which would be marked, in, as it always has been, by the rifle stuck into the ground by the bayonet with the tin hat on the top. And the loops and loops of festoons of telephone wires everywhere, the grey dust over everything, which of course led to those signs, dust brings shells, you know. So these were the first sights of Normandy, which is of really of the rear areas of a battlefield. As yet, we haven't come into contact with the enemy at all.
Did you speak German?
Not really, no, only one or two words.
Which unit of the 1st Battalion of the Manchesters were you in? Which company and platoon?
I was in the B Company headquarters, the D Company headquarters. I was, in fact, the intelligence clerk, so I was in with the company clerk and deputised for him occasionally.
What was the job of an intelligence clerk?
Mainly to issue maps and to get information from the big war maps at brigade headquarters, and keep the platoons up to date with what was happening, and of course interrogation of prisoners, which we didn't have as a unit, so I didn't have to fulfill that function at all. And that was the main thing, I think. Maps, I used to have to issue all the maps and put the maps on the company commander's map board. The strange thing was how often your target happened to be in the middle of four maps, which you had to fold and contort, so they met in the middle, and that happened so many times. So it was an interesting job, really. I enjoyed that. But of course, I didn't have any direct contact with the enemy, except when I went out with the company command or the 2IC to visit the platoons. Then that was a rather unpleasant, because he would leave me in the jeep while he went off to find the company headquarters or the platoon headquarters, and I was sort of left there on my own. And this strange, eerie feeling that there is about no man's land. I think I've spoken about this in my written memoirs. The fact that there is this sort of dead silence, and a strange feeling that it is no man's land, and that you're not quite sure what's going to happen or who might be around the corner. It's strange how a tract of land can do this. And then, of course, when everybody moves forward, then it becomes, again, just ordinary countryside. Anyway, that's the nearest I got, probably, to the enemy, was when I went up to visit the platoons with the company commander. I'd give the information sometimes to the units of how the battle was proceeding.
We should say that your memoirs are in our museum documents department.
That's indeed, yes.
If anybody wants to follow that up.
That's right.
Did you have much contact with the civilians in Normandy?
Yes, a little bit. And I think the general opinion was that they were a pretty taciturn lot and didn't show their emotions very much. But then I think that's typical, A, of Norman farmers, and B, of people who probably have had their farms and their livestock destroyed. They didn't feel very kindly to anybody who'd done that to them, even though we were liberating forces. Later on, the people were much more friendly, and the further we got into France, of course.
Was the 1st Battalion of the Manchesters much in the fighting in Normandy?
Yes, quite a lot. Of course, we landed, as I said, about 3 weeks after D-Day, but we were almost immediately put in as a backup force. Very early, we were quite close to the front line. In fact, it was on the 3rd of July, I was having landed on the 21st of June, and by the 3rd of July, we had come very close to the front, and we were mortared and shelled quite a lot. We didn't lose any personnel at that time, and it was quite a baptism, really, for somebody who had not been under fire at all before. There's a place called Colville, just on the outskirts of Caen. We relieved the Middlesex, who are also machine guns of their battalion. The division. I think it was probably the 3rd Division. I'm not sure about that. Anyway, they were machine gunners as we were. Our job was support, divisional support troops, 4.2 mortars and Vickers machine guns. And I was in the machine gun company, although, as I say, I didn't actually, being company headquarters, I didn't fire a gun. But it certainly was quite a hot spot. I remember one of the strange things where I was sharing a slit trench with one of my friends who had to be the company clerk, and they were mortaring pretty close, and one mortar shell, the blast actually separated the lining of his helmet from the outside. The bolt just sheared, and that was the only damage. It's a strange thing that blast can do. So this was one of the experiences. Of course, that was quite amusing, in fact, just a bit of light relief. But we did get quite heavily stonked, as the term was, in that short period. Well, afterwards, we were drawn back, and we weren't quite so close to the front.
Where did you move through from Normandy?
Well, we made our way down after Normandy. We moved through Falaise. That was a very horrible experience, because we went through at night, and we had to constantly put handkerchiefs to our nose, because the stink of death was quite horrible, and we were bumping over goodness knows what. It was a nightmare journey, that. Sorry about that. One that will certainly stick in my memory forever. I mean, a lot of memories of Normandy will also, because it was a very unpleasant time.
And you say that you didn't come across prisoners yourself?
No, not until much later in the campaign.
And from Falaise?
From Falaise, we gradually went up across the Rhine, the river Seine, yeah, at Louvier. And then, of course, the swan was on, so to speak. We were chasing, and from being tied down and shelled and mortared and shot at constantly in Normandy with this sort of stink of death ever present, we were then conquering heroes, because the cheering crowds appeared again. And I remember that if you stopped your vehicle, you were immediately pulled off, taken off to the nearest estaminet, and all sorts of drinks would appear on the counter, and the state of the soldiery was such, I think, that if the Germans had tried to come back, and they would have walked straight through, because everyone was fast asleep, having drunk so much. It was a wonderful time, because it was such a contrast to Normandy, which had been grim and dour and dangerous. And here we were again, conquering heroes, driving through France, nothing to stop us, up right through to the old battlefield area, Béthune, Arras, Ypres, places like this that one had heard about in the First World War.
Had you seen anything of the treatment by the French of alleged collaborators?
Yes, indeed. That was indeed one of my enduring memories, the fact of going through a town, I'm not sure what it was, probably Lyon, Lyon-le-Forêt, not the Lyon, and down south, and a cart was being driven through the streets full of women with their heads shaven and the local populace jeering them. I think I made a remark then, and it still holds good, that these were the unfortunate ones, and I've no doubt that many a French lass had consorted with or had German boyfriends but hadn't been discovered. And I felt very sorry for these poor girls.
Did your comrades share that sympathy?
I think they did, generally, yes. Yes, I would say so.
Where then did you go through in the Low Countries?
Well, we did a night drive to Antwerp, which we occupied the I can't remember whether it was the 7th Armoured Division or the Guards Armoured Division. I think it was the 7th Armoured Division who actually took Antwerp. Then we were occupying it as garrison troops, if you like, and also clearing the Germans out of the dock area so that the docks could be used.
Was there much difference between the French and the Belgians in the reception you got?
I think there was. I think there was, yes. The people in Antwerp were extremely friendly, and we were treated very, very well.